Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
African parents, they have a different perspective, and she came over in the 60s.
Right.
So she had that experience coming over, being African, being ostracized in a racist environment.
Doesn't sound like much has changed.
Nothing's changed. Nothing's changed. Come on now. I suppose things have changed probably from the 60s, but it's the same type of thing. So it wasn't a question of me saying, Mum, I want to be a teacher, and no, you can't, because it's hard for black teachers. But I think she didn't see my commitment. So she was like, you're not serious. So it's more like a question of, you're not serious, but get serious.
Hi, welcome to Blackticulate, a podcast series featuring UK young black professionals, where we find out how they do what they do, so you can too. Or not. After all, it is your life.
Well. Sound levels were good. I'm good to go.
Good.
How are you feeling?
Fine.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay, there you go. All right, guys, welcome to another episode of Blackticulate. We're all about featuring UK young black professionals, and we try and find out exactly how they do what they do so you can too. And the voice you heard earlier on is Akua Jamfi.
Well done.
Well done. Did I nail it?
Almost.
Almost. Well, tell us.
You paused on the Jamfi. I wanted you to say it in one blow.
Okay.
Again.
Akua Jamfi.
Thank you.
And I often do this with all my guests, and it's not laziness, but it might be. But do tell my bosses, the listeners, who you are, what you do, and we just pretty much have a conversation from there.
I'm Akua Jamfi, and I'm the founder director of the British Blacklist, an online platform which celebrates British black talent in the arts and the wider diaspora.
Boom. You said that before.
A few times.
Yeah. You didn't even pause. You nailed it like, tee.
Sometimes I don't nail it. So I actually was, my mind was working overtime. Okay. Sometimes it takes a while to deliver it so smoothly.
Brilliant. Well, that in itself is, it's no mean feat. It actually seems like a juggernaut having a database of British black, and I assume that's African and Afro-Caribbean when we say black.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who are in the arts world.
Yeah.
Is that art specifically, or are we looking TV and like theatre?
To encapsulate it all, I say the arts.
Right.
Some people have different opinions of what the arts necessarily is.
What's yours? Just be,
well, the arts for me is screen, stage, sound, literature.
Okay.
And that's it. And everything that comes within those umbrella titles.
No, that makes sense. So let's join those dots. Let's start from the very beginning.
I don't know this
Very
song.
Good. What? Sound of Music?
Oh my God, the way you sang
Oh,
it.
Oh, wow. Whew, on my own show, you know. Wow.
I mean, I didn't... Sorry.
No, true. Facts. Okay, yeah, let's start from the beginning. Like, growing up, is that something you always wanted to do? Like, look at the screen, TV?
No. I think as a young person, I always liked entertainment in some way, shape or form, media, celebrity, culture.
When you say liked it, as in it's just you consumed
it? Yeah,
I consumed
a lot of... So my magazines growing up were like, we had things called Black Beat, Word Up. These were like hip-hop magazines and R&B magazines that we used to get. They were from America, imported and sold over here. And then in my teenage years, it was The Source and Vibe magazines. They were my life and my Bibles.
Yeah.
Hip-hop head, serious hip-hop head. R&B was R&B and hip-hop was hip-hop back in them days. I'm sounding so old. But yeah, it's the truth. And I used to watch the Oscars from a very young age. I used to stay up and really watch the Oscars. And I used to imagine myself giving an Oscar speech. But I never wanted to be an actor or director. I never thought about that. But I just loved the whole
That you wanted to be on stage and give a speech.
Yeah, I just love it. For no reason. I just love myself like that. So I loved that. And MTV Awards used to be amazing, spectacular. Again, not like what it is today. There was the production levels in MTV, the MTV Awards. So those are the two awards that I watched. And then all those magazines kind of had that deep interest from that perspective, but I didn't know what I wanted to do.
Yeah. Did you know? I mean, obviously you saw yourself potentially in that field, because
it wasn't even a career wise. Oh. It was just like, just kids' fantasy, just imagining stuff, but just liking the whole thing. But I think it started
that,
to,
if I may, sorry.
No, go on.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, yeah, you can have a fantasy and you can almost probably even say that out loud, but I tend to think, especially with our culture, right, parents aren't necessarily going to promote or be an advocate for that. So was that why it wasn't a career?
Maybe, because I think my mum, typically hardworking Ghanaian mum, she was a midwife, crazy hours. She just said, like, do well, don't get pregnant. Those are the two things. Education, don't get pregnant. That's it.
Wow.
So that's the rules at home. Like, and then it's like, okay, well, cool. But, I mean, you know, life gets in the way. And if you're not, I was always good at English, so this is where things do come full circle when I look back on it. But at that time, as a teen, I was like, I don't know what to do, what I want to be. I'm great at English. I think I remember saying I wanted to be an English teacher, but my mum was like, well, it's quite hard for black teachers. But that's from her perspective at that time.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, I can't be a teacher then, potentially. And then I said, I'm going to be an artist. And literally, because I was really good at fine art, I thought I'd be an artist in Paris. I really thought that could happen.
Nice.
Again, mum was like, okay, that's not realistic. So then in school, I was kind of like that bad child that used to talk a lot and cause trouble. Not a lot of trouble.
Okay.
It's just mathy, as they say. But so I just didn't focus. But the only thing I couldn't fail at in all my nonsense and messing about with my friends was English. Like, English and art, then they were my best, strongest GCSEs. Like that. I could not fail even when I missed about. So that, I think that's what followed me.
Did you carry that on then? English?
No, I left school and just went to college and just did what my friends did. What did we do? We collectively did a fashion course first and thought, we don't like that. So I went to visit, this is a very bad story.
I went
to visit my friend at Hammersmith and West London College after about a month or two at Croydon. She's like, come and see me. So we went up there. And I swear, it was like the first five boys that walked past, I was like, yeah. Me and my friend were like, yeah, this is us. Yes, we can do this. Because I grew up quite sheltered in South London. So it was like coming to West London and being like, my God, there's
choice
other
things
people.
Everywhere.
Yeah, man. Yeah. So that was it. And then just then again, I did kind of like let me retake my maths and maybe do a media course and do art. Again, I wasn't focused because going to a party college like Hammersmith College was back then, I spent most of my time in the common room.
Okay.
Playing backjack and catching joke and again having bants, as you lot say.
Yeah, fair play. Don't age yourself like that, as you lot say. We all say bants, but
no, we didn't say it back then.
Okay,
it was
you did
cussing.
You speak about your mum. Well, you have spoken about your mum and the fact that whenever you potentially said you wanted to do something, did she shut it down?
No. She didn't shut it down. It wasn't that. It was African parents. We come from...
So your dad and mum are together?
No.
Oh, okay.
But African parents, they have a different perspective. And she came over in the 60s.
Right.
So she had that experience coming over, being African, being ostracized in a racist environment.
Doesn't sound like much has changed.
Nothing's changed. Come on now. I suppose things have changed probably from the 60s, but it's the same type of thing. So, especially African parents, I think it wasn't a question of me saying, Mum, I want to be a teacher, and no, you can't because it's hard for black teachers. But I think she didn't see my commitment. So she was like, you're not serious. So it's more like a question of, you're not serious, but get serious. But it's typical when my mum's working, a parent is working 24/7. They're trying to make sure that she's trying to keep me off our version of whatever was on the streets them days and trying to make sure that I'm a good girl that stays on the right path, doesn't get pregnant, because she was a midwife. It's also playing in her mind.
Hence that narrative, because
she used to get quite a few girls from my area and schools coming through. And I'd get girls like saying, I saw your mum. She was lecturing me, you know, and I had my baby, you know, when they're pregnant.
Teenage pregnancy.
Going into the labour ward and seeing... who was mum, they're like, mate, gonna get that lecture from auntie. Those were her fears. But also it was a kind of like, you've got to work it out, figure it out, because otherwise it's go and be a nurse then and do something like that.
Okay, was that, I was gonna say, what was her insofar as shaping your career?
I think she just wanted, because she said, you're clever, do something with it. So I think she kind of, I suppose for her, she did nursing and that was it. That was what you did. You either nurse, lawyer, doctor kind of thing, accountant, engineer.
Yeah.
fit into one of those categories, because otherwise creative stuff is not her. And that's, I understand that she didn't come from that life. Again, that generation of Ghanaians or African parents are not, they don't see creativity.
I wonder what she thinks about what you do now.
Now she doesn't, she doesn't understand it, okay. But she likes the fact that she's seen me on the news and
bless. Okay, before we do jump so far forward, let's continue those dots. So you went to Hammersmith, you dusting around, you're having
and I got kicked out.
You got kicked out. Okay.
I like telling the story because like you can make it back from hardship,
of course,
and being mashed up,
of course. So tell us, what was the next steps?
So next step is when I got kicked out, mum's like, is it? So what, one thing I could always do was hair. I was always good at doing hair. Just used to do my friend's hair and stuff like that. So in that period of me making, like trying to work out what I was going to do, mum said, you're not sitting in the house and being idle. You go and work with your auntie. So my auntie had a home salon in White City.
Oh.
So I went there as punishment. But essentially that really built the groundwork for my hairdressing career.
Right.
My auntie was no nonsense.
Of course.
And she didn't have it. And I had to be there on time. But I loved it. Even though I was working with my aunt, you know, sometimes working with family can be a bit stressful.
Yeah.
But it was really good. It really shaped me. So I did that for the summer period. And then I applied for college again, did a performing arts course. Again, it's just following my friends a bit.
Yeah. I was going to say, why did you apply for college?
One, I had to go back to college. I knew that much. Okay. So I think that's one thing. You can be, you know, when you've got that, you've got a solid upbringing, might be a bit troubled and go a bit left and right. But when you've got that parent that's had your back, you know, makes noise in your head all the time, you kind of can't steer too far off the path, because it's like, I knew I had to do something. Didn't know what I wanted to do, but I had to do something because I know I had my mum in my head.
You wanted to make her proud.
Yeah, you do want. As much as you're, I mean, you know, kids rebel, they get into stuff, but you ultimately don't really want to let your parents down, especially when you know your parents work really hard.
Yeah.
So went back to college and did performing arts for 2 years. And I was actually, even in amongst the messing about, I still hadn't learned my lesson, but did pretty well. And I had, my teacher was like, you could really do something with this if you just focused.
So like when performing arts, you mean like actually acting in front or on stage, or was it behind the scenes?
No, it was acting. It was drama. There was some theory. To be honest, I actually can't remember what we did. I just remember scenes now from, I was in the class with Charles Venn. We call him Chucky.
Okay.
He's in Casualty now. Ah. So we were in the same class. Now, there was a time when we had to do a monologue. That was our assignment. And he did Muhammad Ali, a monologue from, I think, Rumble in the Jungle or something like that. So he did a monologue. It was amazing. My friends and I, we're like, oh, damn.
Yeah, if this is the level.
Because I remember I tried to do the monologue at the end of Menace to Society when Kane is dying and he reflects on what he'd done wrong or whatever. I tried to do that and I delivered it half-assed.
Right.
In comparison to what Charles did, I'm like, wow, now we know why Charles is a successful actor, yeah, where I'm not. But it was funny looking at the levels, but he knew what he wanted to do from day one. I always say, I interviewed him once and I said, you know, like in that moment, I'm like, it's so amazing that you're doing what you're doing, because you knew, age 17, 18, you knew, and I was just messing about.
There's something to be said about that. But you can always still find your feet, which you clearly have.
You can.
Right? Which is, I guess, the story we're still going through.
I know, it's a long story.
No. But I mean, trust me on this one. I'll cut it down. Don't worry about that.
Okay, cool.
I played. So you went back to college and you were doing performing arts, right? So this now you're starting to get yourself, you're moving yourself away from, I guess, the hair and beauty, so being a hairdresser, back into the industry of media and...
Yeah.
Is that fair, or were you still doing them simultaneously?
No, I wasn't doing hair. Did I still work on a Saturday? I think I still worked at my auntie's on the Saturday. No, I think I left.
Because I tend to find that in our generation, definitely, we've got a lot of people who've got the entrepreneur side hustles. They
you
do
need
things.
The side hustles, yeah. Because my hairdressing came back after I did the performing arts. Because like I said, I did the performing arts for the sake of doing performing arts, because all my friends did it. And then when I left, I was like, well, I have no plans to do performing arts. I was never going to be an actor. I never had that vision for myself.
Yeah.
The only thing I'm good at is hair at that point. So I found a friend of mine from college said, oh, look, this girl's looking for a stylist. So there was a stylist in Ladbroke Grove, went there and started working there when I left college. And then I was there for maybe a good 5 years.
Just out of curiosity, and I know you're probably going to tell me you have, but have you ever actually had to apply through the front door for any role, any jobs you've got?
Yeah.
You have?
Okay. Yes.
Because you said your friend had this, your auntie had that. So yeah. It always seemed like, you know.
There was connections there, because it's when you look back at the guidance and the, I think I've been blessed to have the right people just steer me in amongst my confusion. So yeah, the job at the hairdresser was great. 5 years of amazing stuff. 5 years that showed me that I was a fantastic hairdresser.
But you still are. I mean, it's
I still am.
Set, yeah,
but I think my skills have gone down because I don't do it so much.
Okay.
But at that point, when you're not making any money, money's making money, isn't it? It's a job. And it was decent. And them days there, like I said, it wasn't as, well, depending on, I wasn't very, you know, materialistic.
Right.
So, yeah, buy clothes and all that type of stuff, but not like.
Even though you're influenced by The Source and all those magazines, materialism wasn't a thing. You didn't do those big chains.
No, I think, you know why? My mum grounded. Mum kept me grounded, you
Mum's
know.
The one, you
when
know.
I wanted, you know, the in trainers and stuff, mum would be like, is it? Well, I haven't got the money for that. So then I had to find a way to look good without having the name brand. So I grew up without having name brands. Mm. So when it got to the point when everyone was going nuts, because when we were in college, it was Stone Island, it was Moschino, heavy stuff like that. Okay, remember Averex?
Was Kappa? Was Kappa big then?
Nah.
Nah. Okay, gotcha.
No. 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 It's all like you had to have some sort of Moschino, Versace, all that type of stuff. And I don't remember buying any of that, but I still managed to look good.
Yeah. So help us join the dots then, closer to when you first started.
Which Blacklist?
Yes.
So that was...
Because obviously you'd say now performing arts, but then you became a stylist.
Became a hairstylist. I was doing hairdressing and I started to do hair for celebrities. I did like a few music videos and stuff like that. So I got a touch of that world. Mm. And then at the last moment, I did a Paris Fashion Week for a stylist called Lance Lowe. And when he saw my work on that, he said, look, I want you to be my assistant. So I was like, cool, can do that. Then I became pregnant. And then I realized I couldn't do what he, because he did big styling, big long shoots, right. Long days, long hours. And I was like, I can't do that. So I'm going to have to reassess my life. So I went back, studied multimedia. Then part of that course requirement was to apply for uni. Applied for a journalism degree, and that's that. So then from that, work experience at Channel U, worked at Channel U, left Channel U. Someone again said, oh, look, there's this job going at BBC. Had to go through the front door and apply, you know, do an interview for that. Got the role there.
What were you doing for your Channel AKA or Channel U?
Channel
as
U,
a once upon
the original
time,
title.
Yeah, for sure.
I was doing a multitude of things. It was so ad hoc. I did admin. I did website management. I supported the guy picking the videos. I did content researcher. I was a researcher on the Ill Art Show of Ace and Viz.
Okay.
So it's a bunch of stuff. It was great.
Yeah, amazing.
It was a great first job.
Was that something that you would advise insofar as if you don't know what you want to do per se, but you know the industry, just go into a small outfit and then try and do a bit of everything?
No, because that wasn't planned. That was just work experience and someone put me in touch with someone and said, hey, try that.
But now that you do know what you did get, what sort of advice would you give?
What I would say is that for me, I never knew what I wanted to do, but the only thing I couldn't fail at is what I ended up working with, which was English, and I liked media. So those are the things that took me...
That were consistent throughout and still continue to serve you well.
Yeah, exactly. So I think it's looking at what you're good at. And you might not necessarily like what you're good at, but if you do that, it opens up different doors. Like I said, I was doing hairdressing, media environment. When I had to change it all up, what could I fall back on? The fact that I'm great at English. Mm. So I can't use my hands in that way. I can use my mind and my wordsmith levels. I don't think of my words, but yeah, I can't even speak ironically.
Yeah,
but yeah, so using those skills is what got me to the next step. Okay. I thought I'm not an accountant, I'm not going to be a doctor, and I'm not doing all that, but my words and my brain are good. So
tell me about this next steps then, because you still work for the BBC, am I right in saying?
No, I've left now.
You have
redundancy last year.
Okay, gotcha. Mm-hmm. And but whilst you were working for the BBC, you also establishing this platform.
Yeah, so about 2012, I had an idea. I had done a little bit of freelance stuff, and it wasn't back in the day again.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promote for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Spring is my favorite time to start a new workout routine. With the weather warming up, it feels easier to get into the rhythm of things. Whether you have 20 minutes or an hour for a Pilates class or outdoor guided walk, Peloton has everything you need to help you get going. Get a head start on summer with Peloton at onepeloton.com.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Online stuff was building. So I did a few articles for a few online publications, but it wasn't as big as it all is now. And I think it might have been that I was trying to research something and thought, okay, I can't find any information about this British black person potentially. And then my brain started to tick because I was looking at something about films, like black films. How do you know what's still in existence, what's been deleted, and who's archiving and documenting that? Because then my idea was to do a database of every single black film ever made across the world, ever.
Across the world, wow.
Globally. Listen, I was ambitious.
Oh, no, it's awesome.
This was my plan. I was like, okay, how do I do this? So I started listing everything and researching it. And it's when I got to the UK stuff, I was like, well, there's not much on British black film. Maybe I should turn it around and focus on that and see what's going on.
How were you listing it? Just out of interest. Spreadsheet? Excel?
I had an Excel sheet.
See? And you just Googled?
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like lists and database. I think I like that. So doing that research was amazing, actually. So I had everything categorized and listed. And then when I got to British film, I was like, okay, there's not much there. So I thought, let's do something with that. And then when I was looking into the people that are in these British black films, I was thinking, okay, so obviously we talk about the film, we need to talk about the people. So then let's list the people too. And then I was like, oh, IMDb. And then it all started to come together and become...
IMDb, that's what I'm assuming.
That was my reference.
Yeah, exactly.
So then I thought, maybe I do this. And then it just turned into this whole world and it became person facing more than just doing films. Right. And then because we are, as black creators, people are like this anyway, but as you said, we're entrepreneurial and we have so many skills. We're multi-skilled because we have to be, especially in this climate where being black doesn't doesn't guarantee
you
access.
Say it with your chest.
Everything. So, and it makes sometimes the levels is harder. So because we do so many things, I realise that actually this one actor, I always use Ashley Waters, he's a rapper, director, writer, all these type of things. So how do I document that? He's worked on film, TV, stage. That's when the whole world became TV, screen, film, and if you've written a book, and if you've directed, if you've written a film, and all that type of stuff. So yeah, it just became this big old thing.
Wow, this is, again, a huge mountain, and massive. Thank you for even starting that journey, on behalf of myself and everyone who might be listening.
Thanks.
So what are the steps? How do you, apart from obviously Excel and documenting and listing and going on Google, do you get people coming to you? Because I'm just thinking from my listener's perspective, let's say they themselves were an actor or a director or producer or anything. Do they submit themselves to you?
Yeah, at the moment.
Or is there, what's your qualification? What's your criteria?
At the moment, we're having a little bit of an overhaul. So I'd hate to say that this is how you do it because it's going to change.
Okay.
So, but in previous years, I had people out there on the database. And if you had stuff going on, you'd let me know. We'd update it. Or if people like, oh, I want to be on it, send me your details. And then it'd go up on the...
Okay, so you don't qualify insofar as... This is going to sound elitist, and I don't mean it to, but a certain level of professionalism.
When I first launched, I think my thing for when I first launched, you had to have made something within a certain time frame of... Because I launched in 2012, so I think I had like a five-year window. Like if you hadn't made anything in 5 years, then I'll just take it that you hadn't really been doing anything. Because otherwise you could have anybody.
Yeah.
And then it had to have made an impact. And that doesn't necessarily mean it's been on mainstream something. It just could have been underground, just made an impact. Like, say if Big Shaq had that, I would have been like, well, he can qualify to have a profile because he's obviously made a cultural impact. That was my little criteria because I felt I'm a newbie, come out of nowhere, going to drop this thing and say, hey, I'm this database of, you know, talent. Trust me with your information. So I thought I'd build a reputation first.
Tell me about that. What are those steps of building a reputation?
My thing was that it had to look good. It had to give quality information and just be respected because I felt like we are harsh on ourselves. The industry is harsh on black products anyway. It's going to go through an extra level of scrutiny to be accepted and to be trusted. we ourselves put ourselves to an extra level of like, are you good enough? What are you doing? Who are you? Yeah. How are you doing this?
Don't want to work with black businesses.
Yeah, there's that whole thing and professionalism and or unprofessionalism, as it were. So I thought the main thing is whatever I'm putting out there has to be on point, and that's it. And I know I've made so many mistakes along the way, but that was my driving force.
Yeah, I hear that.
And then finding people to support this vision with me that can see, you know, work to the same level of excellence. That's all it was. And it's just being consistent every day, had content going out. Because when I did the database, I realized that while I'm building up trust there, I need to keep people coming back to it. So I added on the editorial bit. So that's like where we did news reviews and interviews.
Right, gotcha.
But at first it was just news because, like, again, no one's going to let you through the door. They don't know who you are and you've got no numbers. So it was just talking about what's going on in the industry, making sure we were on point first.
You're always
news
visible. So
yeah.
Whenever someone Googled, hopefully you guys will would be definitely so on the, like, first page,
yeah,
and whatnot.
Exactly.
Yeah. I'm just curious, what website did you... Did you have a template or the design aspect? It's almost nitty gritties that I'm really trying to get through. So when people are listening, going, okay, I want to also create a database on X. It doesn't necessarily have to be.
I think for me, it was just when looking at the design, I can't remember. That's really bad to say. I can't remember who I worked with. My design was just like, it was a simple WordPress.
Right.
But it was manipulated to accommodate the database. So it wasn't just a template. It was. Then it was
they
designed.
Made it bespoke, so yeah. The back end, obviously. Yep.
I'm not. I remember when I worked at Channel U. I must have. It's funny when you look back and see the things that are in you.
Yeah.
And trying to come out of you, but not in the right way. I did this database at Channel U, actually.
Okay.
And I don't know if it's still there, but I remember doing a version of the British Blacklist at Channel U for Channel U because I was thinking, we got all these grime artists. No information on them. Mm-hmm. So I did research. I remember doing Kano's profile. I remember doing Akala's profile. And I just went in and said, like, we should have this on our site. And then I remember redesigning the site and it was so bad. Like, I went into Photoshop. That thing wouldn't even have loaded. The way I did Photoshop designs, I did little headers and butt. And when I think back now to what the level of work I put in, I mean, to be honest, I should be a millionaire right now because if
you
I did a little bit a little bit of training, I could have been a great web designer, but it was so tacky.
Yeah.
But it just showed that I had something in me that I wanted to do something. So yeah, my first version was at Channel AKA. But so, like, I'm just trying to say, I had no clue about design.
No, I just
knew what looked good and I was looking at what else is in there, looking at the, you know, Vibe Online at that point, Source Online at that point, all the media magazines and pop culture magazines, right, that I liked. I just looked at them and thought, how do we deliver content in a similar way? Looking at the level of excellence and the language that we use and all that type of stuff.
Which in itself is actually great advice as well. You know, fundamentally, there's no point reinventing the wheel, right? Just slightly, you know, borrow, copy and paste.
Well, it's not... Copy and paste is dangerous because then you cannot plagiarize.
Oh, yeah, no. I don't literally mean verbatim.
Try to get me out, like, yeah, British Black is copy and paste there. No.
Well, no.
Articulate.
I was thinking more about the audience. Like, okay, these are my industries or my lack of a better term.
So look at
your competitors
yeah. or your peers.
Yes, my peers.
And look at what they're doing right. If you're going to copy things, copy the right things.
Right.
That's what my mother used to say. So if you're going to copy or at least learn the right things. You don't want to be doing the same mistakes as others because some people got great, big, massive, shiny sites, but they're not hitting the mark. So just look at what people are doing and do your version of that. But do your version because your audience isn't the same as theirs.
Precisely.
And even if they are, they're going to that place for that. So what are you going to do something different? You could be in the same space, but people come to you for your thing.
Yeah, no,
so
100%.
Understand your unique...
Selling
your
point.
USP, your USP, unique power and all that type of stuff.
Gotcha. Yeah, okay, no, I'm with you. I love the back message.
Just saying.
I love it. I love it. So yeah, so now that we've pretty much getting, for me anyway, this is the beautiful thing about Blacktickulate. It's really trying to just get those resources, those tools, right, and the best piece of advice. So you're like, okay, you wanted to create a database which is fundamentally focusing on black British, you know, artists.
Yeah.
In your definition
creatives,
of artists.
Yeah.
Right? Creatives. So we're going to put this database, and even though individuals might actually do multiple things because mm-hmm. they're multidisciplinary,
mm-hmm.
they're still going to be in a database if they've done something within 5 years and if they made a sort
at
of cultural...
At that point, this is the old ruling.
Yeah. Right. And they've had some form of cultural impact, mm-hmm. then they definitely are on the list,
mm-hmm.
which is brilliant. In order to do that, what you did is, I think we've established, you've established your website, then you started to get a team together, or did you... And are you starting to be known or getting recognition, like, you know, amongst the industry?
In 5 years ago?
Yeah.
Or
Well, now I assume now, now you are. But I
so
mean,
the journey in the
when
beginning,
you started, yeah.
You know, it's just, it, I can't remember when it all kicked in. But
was there a tipping point? Sorry, I threw you so many questions there.
No, it's not that. I was just trying to think because, one, my memory is quite bad. And two, which I keep getting told off about, which is, I'm probably going to get told off for saying this as well. So many things happen and it's hard to pinpoint and say, oh, yay, that was that moment. Because when you're someone who's
always on,
always working, nothing, it's not that nothing's good enough. Everything is fantastic and you learn from everything. But it's being satisfied with everything that's happened when it's hard because it's like, I got so much more to do.
Yeah.
So recognizing the landmarks, which is not necessarily a good thing because depending on your character, because I don't mark the things that might be significant because I'm like, I got more to do. So that's great. Well done for that, but let's not get complacent.
Yeah.
But if you've got one of those characters where you can get easily swayed by the lights, then I say that's not necessarily a good thing. No, but it's also not necessarily a good thing if you don't mark them because it helps you kind of
progress.
One, answer questions checks. Like this.
Checkpoints.
And two,
yeah.
Checkpoints. It's good to see where you got, like, what it is. So back to your question. My tipping point, I'm not sure when it was. I think one of my biggest moments of visibility that really helped was when I had the, and it was an impromptu, unthought of, marketing thing where I was at an event, can't remember the event, and there were people of note, celebrities there, and I wanted to take a picture of them, but I wanted people to know that it was the British Blacklist. And at that point, my Photoshop skills were still a little bit woo, a little bit way. And I was thinking, if I'm going to come back and have to come and edit a watermark and all that type of stuff, and it's all going to be long. So what can I do? Scramble. Oh, just give them my card because the logo was the old logo and the new logo, but the original was quite bold, black and white.
Right.
Give them the card, then no one can tell me that's not my picture. And that's the thing that will set us out from anyone else because we were there, we got that person with the card.
Yeah.
That became a thing. So like every time we went out, people were like, yeah, man, where's the card? I want to take a picture of the card. And then I remember catching, I know we've got Chiwetel holding the card, we've got John Boyega holding the card. And it's such a blurry picture that I don't care. I will roll that picture out. John Boyega's holding the card. Chiwetel's holding the card. We've got Idris holding the card. Amara Sante's holding the card. Got some people holding the card. And that kind of helped us get this little
visibility
thing going on. And it was a very unthought of, unplanned marketing campaign, which did us a lot.
How big were the cards?
They're just
like actual business cards.
But because the logo was the British Blacklist in black font.
So what, they just put it by their face?
Literally, like, it was just that. And that's what kind of sparked off a little bit of presence about the British Blacklist, along with everything else, the content and the articles and stuff like that. And then I was looking for a team of writers, so we put a call out. Didn't get much feedback, but what I found worked was that people who liked the site might get in touch and say, look, I love what you're doing. I'd love to contribute in some way. What are you interested in?
Right.
And then I'd get a team like that. So we built up a great stable of writers, based on just either I looking at someone and saying, okay, you know what, you'll be good. How about contributing?
I mean, your database, I assume you've got a huge, huge roster of contributors in the list. Like globally, or are they just UK-based?
No, I had UK-based. Just people, it wasn't like, that's a lot. It wasn't a huge roster.
Right.
But I was looking at you like, okay, slow down. Slow. But it was a nice team of people that just saw, I either saw something in them or they saw something in TVB and they were like, yeah. So we had a good run of people contributing, and that's how the team grew.
And then you send them out to events and press places in order for you to just be on the pulse, right?
Yeah,
exactly. That news outlet. Amazing. And I assume now a lot of doors potentially are open to you because people know who you are.
Yeah, doors have been opened now that we've been recognised. You know, it's been amazing. The industry has had, we've had great support from different organisations. And they were organisations that I was like, wow, these are amazing when I was younger. And I'm like, I'm actually working with them or having conversations with them. It's been ridiculous, but it is based on the strength of what we've put out there. And even though sometimes I can be, as an editor, like, oh my God, I've looked back at old articles and I'm like, oh my God, there's massive typos there. And I would have chopped that down because you grow and evolve and your mind changes every year and every day. So, you know, if I'm not careful, I can hack some stuff, some old stuff to death. But just on the strength of what we've generally done, we've had great collaborations and support from the industry.
Yeah, I'm wondering, did the industry come to you then if they want to try and diversify their production teams, their cast? They do.
Yes.
So you almost pitting yourself or positioning yourself to be that.
Yes.
Is that one of the services you provide?
Yes.
Okay, because you never mentioned that. Why you just keep on saying yes like that so bluntly? And there you are. But the way she's looking at me, people, is like, yes, yes. I was like, all right. I was sweating over there.
I'm just confirming your rightness.
Yeah, I'm getting hot there. Right. I'm getting hot. But that is a service you provide, right?
Yeah.
You go on a board and you and your team will go, okay, these are the people we can bring to you.
Yeah, I mean, it's not even as formal as that. People will get contacted and say, look, looking for these people, can you help us? And we do, where we can.
Do you get a kickback from that? It's like, if I introduce you to, say, X.
That's how the business kind of goes.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah,
so okay. That's how it goes.
Okay, so we've spoken about the path, we've spoken about how you've established, and we've spoken about some of the resources and tools. We've spoken about good stuff, but challenges like money. I mean, we're speaking about money now, aren't we? We're speaking about things about...
Well, it depends, because I suppose it's like every individual listening and in general who wants to start a business has got their own plans, ideas, life experiences, life issues, all that type of stuff. Finances is always a problem if you don't come from money and you don't have that legacy money or generational wealth or stuff like that. So the only thing for me is just be consistent and do what you love and be good at it.
What does that mean, be good at it?
Because be good at it means... Yeah.
Or can you recognise when you're not good at it? I guess
the market will tell you. So like I said, I've looked back on stuff where I know that I was tired. I was trying to juggle 10,000 things. And then I put out an article that wasn't edited well enough because I had, like I said, I've seen typos and stuff like that. That happens. Mm-hmm. But then that goes to show, okay, where am I going wrong here? Because that means I need to sort my team. I need more support. So some people don't recognize when they need support. Some people don't recognize when they need to take a break. Some people don't recognize when their business is just flailing under or failing under the leader's short-sightedness. So that's where I think where you can be going wrong and stuff like that. You've got to be, so being good is not just about actually your sight is good. So, and we like it. It's more about actually being a good leader, a good self-employee, because you're employing yourself to do something. Yeah, it's a bit ambiguous saying be good, but be aware of what you're doing. Do it to the best that you can do. And if you feel like you're not doing it to the best, look at who can support you. Because I think I know where my weaknesses are. I know that I'm not good at everything. So I need to know who's good at it. Find that person and get them on board with what I'm doing. And let's keep it moving. Yeah, it's hard for me to answer this.
No, I get it to a certain degree. But I think for my sake, and when you say be good at it, I understand, yeah. Put out whatever you'd want to consume yourself.
Yeah,
right? Furthermore, there is sometimes you can be blinded by passion.
Yeah.
Right, and therefore, if we're just this isn't our wheelhouse, how do we understand that and cut that off? But you're saying don't cut it off. Find someone who can actually support.
Well, if your audience is saying yeah, we like this, cool. If they're not responding, look at what you're doing wrong. Because and again, it depends. And if you're really if this is just a side project, cool, you can just keep doing it. Mm. It might be wasted energy at the point, but if you feel like you're just serving three fans and they're happy with what you're doing, that's cool. But if you really want it to be your business, then you have to be smart quickly or, you know, as soon as you can get like, this isn't working. How do I do this? How do I sort this out? I don't think this is the best thing. It's not the best straightforward advice because it isn't just about be good.
Yeah, I guess. And also the business in of itself, there's no cookie.
There isn't. I think that's why it's hard because... Again, someone could be listening to this, oh, I'm going to do it. It's not going to be everyone wants to do a database, so I can tell you how I did a database, but I can just tell you how I'm working it out, being a self-employed entrepreneur. And what I've learned is that my thing was, it has to be black excellence. It has to be excellent. You want people to trust in your brand. You want people to like your brand. You want people to buy into your brand. So you have to be good at what you're doing. And if you're not good at what you're doing, and if your idea is great, then who are the people that can support you in making your idea, making you good at what you're doing?
Yeah, and no, I hear that.
I think that's what
it is. No, of course I hear that. And I think also, I love the etymology of the word passion, which is something we're willing to suffer for.
Yeah, exactly.
So knowingly knowing that, you know, this is your mountain and it's never always going to just be an upward curve, there are going to be dips. So if you're willing to suffer for those downtimes, you know that eventually there will be great times and vice versa. Or was that a bit too convoluted?
No. I think,
did that make sense?
No, it makes sense. It's just if you can have passion for something, and being blinded by passion is a problem. Being driven by a passion is great. You know, I'm drinking this apple juice and like I love this apple juice and I'm driven, I'm going to start selling apple juice. Yeah, but are you supposed to be selling apple juice? You're supposed to be working on the British blacklist right now. So there's that type of your passion might not always be the right thing. You just might actually really like it, but then you're doing it in the wrong way.
I know what you mean. I definitely know what you mean. At the end of the day, it's, and that's what I mean, is something we're willing to suffer for. So if we know that when the hard time comes, we're cool with that.
Yeah, that makes sense.
It's like, actually, apple juice is like, if the hard time hits, what am I doing? How much am I putting in? Nah, I'm out.
That's exactly it. Because so that's what I'm saying. Because yeah, passion can passion about bare things. I've got ideas all day long.
Okay, so that is definitely a challenge in of itself, the financials, and also bringing teams on that can help support.
Bringing teams on and managing teams and making sure that the team's getting the best out of what they want. Because you learn as you work with people that some people have got their own hopes and dreams and ideas as well. So as someone who's a leader, you've got to manage that and make sure that your team's being served the best way that they can. Because we have people, you have turnover, people come, they go, they stay and all that type of stuff. So it's just understanding what people want as well. When you're there pushing your passion, you've got people on board that are supporting you. You have to remember that they're also sacrificing time. So making sure that their passions are being
met.
Yeah.
So you can actually fulfill that.
Yeah.
You got any stories where you haven't?
No.
Oh, look at that. I'm a great leader.
I'm a fantastic leader.
Okay.
I mean, it's not human relations, but I think, yeah, I've always been quite open, honest, and you can speak to me about anything. So mm-hmm. I'd like to think that I've been a decent leader.
No, well, we'll get maybe some of your staff members on Blacticulate as well. They get
yeah,
the
come
scoop.
And expose. Get the She's expose. A taskmaster.
Okay, I do want to round this up and hit you with the quick fire questions as I do with all my guests. Cool. But prior to that, it's all about paying it forward. Okay. Any black businesses, services or products that you use regularly that you want to shout out?
Wait, let me think.
Ooh.
This is from a female perspective. This is actually, no, it's not from a female perspective. It's from a fashion perspective, I should say that. So Love Yaya.
Love Yaya.
Her belts are amazing.
Okay.
And then her sister, As Black As Love, Queer Afosuheni, is my custom bespoke clothes maker. She makes clothes ridiculously. Give her any picture and she'll design. Amazing. Men, and she does male and female fashion. She's ridiculous. So those are my my go-to black businesses that I always use. Just shout out the Black British Business Award. Shout out We Are Parable. Shout out the New Black Film Collective. Shout out Caramel Film Club. Shout out the Colour Network. Shout out everyone black and British doing their thing.
There you go. I like it. So who are you here to support? Everyone black. Issa
basically.
Ray. Yeah, I love that. When she's
basically.
Do you see that?
Yes, I did. Yeah. And I agree wholeheartedly.
No, 100%. Okay, so you ready for those quick fire round questions?
Sure. And
okay, so if you could do a TED Talk other than your profession, what would it be on?
Being a mother.
Being a mother. Tell me more. I know there's going to be quick fire questions about now. Tell me more.
I think being a mother in business. You want it to be quick.
Yeah. That's true. Touché. Okay, your last £5 on earth, what are you spending it on?
Oh, Sherbet Pips. They're ridiculous. Okay. They're amazing.
What is a superpower that you wouldn't want?
To read people's minds.
Okay. Blacticulate is black action articulated. So I'm all about words and articulation. What's your favourite English word?
Kumquat. Kumquat.
What's that?
It's a little orange. It's my favourite word for no reason since I was young. I just love kumquat.
Kumquat. The word success, who's the second person that springs to mind?
The word success, the second person. Someone else has asked me that. Huh. I don't know. The second person. Mm-hmm. Why would I...
See, it makes you think a little, as opposed to just doing that deep for Oprah or someone like that.
Obviously.
Yeah.
But why would I think about the second person?
Just so you know that, you know, it's real out here.
Quantify success.
Exactly. Well, to your definition of success.
My mum.
Amazing. Who's the first, just out of curiosity?
Oprah. Okay. Obviously.
Do you see yourself as a success?
Yes.
So
you asked me a question. You want me to expand on everything I say?
No, no, I'm not country. Okay. I love that.
I saw the face.
Yeah, no, I do. Well, thank you. My face. and I guess my penultimate question before I do ask, you know, the bosses, the listeners, how they can find you on the World Wide Web is, how would you like to be remembered?
As a good mother, a great businesswoman, and a decent human being.
Right. Do you not feel like you're that already?
You said, what do I want to be remembered by?
I'm teasing. I think you are. How can we find you on a World Wide Web? And when we do, what would you like us to do?
www.thebritishblacklist.co.uk, at Brit Blacklist on Twitter, The British Blacklist on Instagram, The British Blacklist on Facebook, and obviously like, subscribe, and enjoy our content.
Yeah.
Always looking for new writers, actually. So if you want to be a writer, have interest in the arts, holla, info@thebritishblacklist.com. Very simple, straightforward. Other than that, I've got stuff going on, so yeah, I might be back.
Yeah, okay, you'll be back on Black Tickle. Yeah. You heard it here first, guys. Okay, well, it's been an absolute pleasure, and thank you very much for gracing us with your voice. And guys, listen, as always, if you think I'm slipping, and you know, I should be asking better questions, I'm always accountable to you, so get at me, man. Just, you know, just try and make it better, better, better.
Wow, that's so...
What's up?
Easygoing of you. I'm going to email a bunch like, you should have asked me this. I'm going to wait till afterwards.
Well, that's why we'll get you back around. Hey guys, we really appreciate you listening, and if you have any feedback, please leave it in the comment section below. Also, all the info about the guests, the links and the resources we speak about will be in the description below. And last but not least, please, please, please do get in touch if you can teach us how you do what it is you do. Because after all, Black Ticulate is all about empowering and upskilling the community. Thanks, guys. You're the best. See you soon.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.